And yeah, so that's the story of how three drunken dogs tried to get into my hotel room.
I'm sorry, what?
And welcome to Spooky You.
We are here. We are spooky. We are you. Oh, that's an existential crisis in and of itself.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Okay, I'm JP. That's Allie.
I'm Allie.
Let's get into this.
Let's do this.
We are talking about, what was it, demon dogs?
Hellhounds, demon dogs. Oh,
yes, the hounds of hell.
Hell, the pits of hell.
Wait, wasn't there a Michael Jackson?
Was it?
Oh, in a Thriller, where there's that evil voice at the end of the song, and he's like, the hounds of hell.
Really? Yeah. Oh, we need to go back and listen to that. That is a good song.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, that is Halloween in a pop song.
It really is. It really, really is. Okay, so
I do have a quick question, because sure. I think you were the one who came up with this idea, right?
Well, kind of. This kind of came off of episode one, where we talked about Akershus.
The kite grin.
Yes, yeah. God. So we thought, you know what? There's something here. We should elaborate a little bit on this.
Oh, yeah. And then we got into it. And also, I am a huge fan of Sherlock Holmes' Hound of Baskerville.
That's a great book. So what was your question?
I was trying to remember. Was it you or me who came up with this idea?
I think it was a combination of both, to be honest. I think it was just one of those, like, you and I were having a conversation and said, hey.
We just vibed on demon dogs.
Yeah, we were
dogs.
Vibing yeah. on the demon dogs.
If you guys haven't noticed, that's kind of the general trend between the two of us.
Yeah, just generally vibe on weird shit. It's fine.
All right.
It's what siblings do.
All right, well, let's kind of get into this. And first, I've got to also ask again, what the hell is a hellhound?
What the hell is a hellhound? Well, I will tell you what the hell a hellhound is. So a hellhound, ladies and germs, is a supernatural...
I'm rolling my eyes dramatically.
You should. You really should, because I am ridiculous. It's a supernatural dog in folklore that is featured in various mythologies around the world.
I cannot stress enough how many there are.
Yeah, we kind of boiled this one down a little bit.
And by boiled down, we mean we just focused on the ones in England.
Yes, so... British.
If we miss your favorite demonic dog, I apologize. We'll get to them later.
Email us at spookyyoupodcast@gmail.com. So features attributed to the hellhounds are like mangled, matted black fur, glowing red eyes, super strength and speed, ghostly characteristics, and a foul odor.
Well, first, how big are we talking here? Like, I'm imagining
big.
Okay, because you weren't...
I'm feeling bigger than a Great Dane, personally.
Yeah, I just wanted to be clear, because, I mean, I saw, like, donkey size, but I'm also...
you saw donkey size?
Yeah, or an ass size.
Yeah,
ass size.
We talking,
pounds.
Like, a thick ass, like a dump truck ass?
Well,
okay,
these were...
good night.
Good God. Well, I'm done. Here's the reason why I got to ask, because for a brief moment in my head, I was like, oh, she didn't mention the size of the dog, so now I'm imagining, like, a corgi-sized demonic hound.
You know what?
Like beady little red eyes, and it's just like scampering around with its legs that you can't, they're like motion blurred, you can't see them, it's coming after you.
So I think that pop culture depictions of a hellhound are mostly larger dogs, but I think if we're really going to be honest.
We need a demon corgi.
No, corgis are perfect, so don't go after corgis.
We need.
Chihuahua.
Chihuahuas need to be portrayed as hellhounds.
Although I have met a few chihuahuas that are very sweet.
I know, but just like seeing that cute little dog and like seeing a dog that size you
that
can pick
small,
up with like
yeah.
beady red eyes and
a little teacup chihuahua that smells like brimstone and
that
just
you could
brings
hold
death
up and,
upon you.
Yeah, and yeah. you could like hold it out in front of your friends and it breathes fire in directions.
Well, this has already gotten away from us. So back to what a hellhound is. Apparently, it's a chihuahua with demon red eyes. But in certain European legends, it states that if you stare into the hellhound's eyes three or more times, you will die. So seeing a hellhound in general or hearing it howl can also be an omen of death. So the fact that we say hearing it howl, to me, that sounds like a larger dog. I don't necessarily think a smaller dog howls as much.
Oh, yeah, no, they're absolutely huge.
But you could probably hear a demon dog yip.
Yeah.
The yip of death.
Just imagine becoming fear of the sound. Yip, 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 yip.
I'm already afraid of that sound.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know my rule. If you can hear a child, but you cannot see a child, you leave the room. The same goes for a small yipping dog.
Okay, well, fair enough.
I got more.
So, okay.
I got more. Let me go.
All right, all right.
This is the sibling argument. Well, no, because you're going to have more to add on to this. I know you are. We talked about this.
Keep going.
In cultures that associate the afterlife with fire, the hellhound is said to have fire-based abilities. This is what I know you wanted to elaborate on a little bit.
Well, I was going to say that also in a lot of mythologies as well, hellhounds are typically associated with areas of death. So imagine graveyards, battlefields. Generally, if a lot of people are died in an area, you could probably expect that there's some kind of myth about a demon dog involved
Definitely. Am I remembering correctly, or did we talk about like a hellhound guarding
the
graveyard? We know it guards Akershus.
Yes. And we'll get into a little bit more because that's a particular one of the Grimm.
Yes.
Or the Church Grimm.
Which we are going to get to that.
Yes.
And let's see here. Yes, we talked about the worlds. I have that in my notes. That's really cool. I thought that was pretty cool because it makes me think of the movie Hercules when Hades is going into the underworld and he tosses the stake to the three-headed dog. And the stake he tosses is like super small, but then it stretches like super big.
Yes.
And yeah, don't think that escaped me, Disney.
No. I saw that. No, I mean, that was fantastic, but one of the things I found was that while we typically would picture Cerberus today as having three heads and kind of looking like an evil guard dog, apparently earlier depictions of Cerberus actually had him having between 50 to 100 heads.
That's just a lot. Like, how do you decide where you want to go for dinner?
Yeah. God, I mean, that's...
It's a lot of opinions.
Yeah, that's a lot of opinions. I mean, that's also just a lot of mouths to feed. I mean, can you imagine how many big bags of treats you would need to buy?
All the milk bones.
Yeah.
Do you think they would eat milk bones? Probably bacon strips.
Well, I think, milk bones. I mean, they're not... You're guarding hell, so you probably aren't too prissy and picky.
But at the same time, you're probably the only being guarding hell, so you have a right to be a little bit picky, and you're probably best buddies with whoever runs hell.
Hades?
Yeah, depending on the mythology you're following at the time.
Okay, could I go on a quick side tangent of a fun thing with a friend named Hades?
You have a friend named Hades?
Yeah.
Okay, well, go for it. I want to hear this.
So, whenever I was in college, I met one of the new freshmen coming into my band. Mm-hmm. And the rule is that when you come into the section, you got to tell a story so that we can kind of get to know you. And one of these kids tells the story of when he was 4 years old and he really loved the movie Hercules.
Great movie.
So a woman came up, apparently a friend of his mom's, and was like, "Oh, and who's this?" And his response with that, perky 4-year-old boy attitude was, "Hades, Lord of the Underworld."
Hell yeah.
The woman backed off, and from that point on, we called him Hades.
I love that.
Yeah, so that's the story of how I befriended Hades. But back to Cerberus, according to Apollodorus, there was also a period of time where Cerberus was depicted as having snakes coming out of his tail, his back, and... Oh, God.
Everywhere?
Yeah, everywhere.
Very Medusa-like.
Yeah.
Well, so this is the Greek... mythology. Yeah,
very early, yes. I mean, there were interpretations later that showed three or two heads, but further back, there are sources that you had, like, snake body, demon dog, which, quite frankly, I'd be terrified to enter Hades.
It's right up there with the chihuahua.
And also fun, as little segment thing that we will have going on throughout here, is Harry Potter references.
Harry Potter references!
So one thing that I have here is the story of Eurydice?
Huh?
Eurystheus. Oh, Eurystheus? I said it right the first time. I don't know why I'm struggling. Yeah. Eurystheus.
It's okay.
When he traveled to the underworld for his beloved, he obviously was confronted with Cerberus, who was not too thrilled about the fact that a human was trying to get into... A live human was trying to get into the land of the dead. However... Eurystheus, being cunning, played some music to put Cerberus to sleep.
What does that sound like to you?
Cerberus Snape. Well, he was the one who played the... Yeah, he was the one who put
music. Technically he did put Fluffy to sleep.
Yeah.
But that is how you would put Fluffy... Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't read Harry Potter.
Yeah.
At least the first Harry Potter book.
And other than that, I've got that Cerberus was apparently the love child of... Echina and Typhoon. A half woman, half snake, and a serpentine giant that was known for being extremely dangerous.
Oh, I don't like that.
No, and also apparently in some sources for Greek mythology, Cerberus is brothers with the Hydra.
The what?
The Hydra.
The Hydra.
Yeah, you know, the cut off one head, two more take its place, giant monster.
Okay.
Yeah, apparently he and Cerberus are brothers.
My mind went right to the Hail Hydra thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The hand motion you just did. Yeah, yep. That's anyway. Where my mind went to.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. But yeah, fun fact.
Well, you're kind of on a roll with these myths. So we're wrapping up the Greek mythology, but tell me more about the British mythology, because that's going to lead us into sightings. ?
It will. Everyone, just buckle up and grab your ass. It's going to get spooky.
Grab your ass. Goodbye.
So the three that I narrowed down to, because there's a lot of variants and a lot of names.
Yeah, this is kind of like the TLDR version.
So the three that I found were the Barfist, the Black Shook, and the Church Grim. Now, these also go by many different names, and the description we gave earlier, mm-hmm. they all pretty much fit that description.
Yeah.
The big one that I found and looked into the most was the Black Shook. And according to the Oxford Dictionary, the Shook is derived from the Old English word suka, meaning devil/fiend, from the root word skia, meaning to terrify. Now, this myth dates back about 1,000 years. One theory was that the dog's owner drowned in a river when the horse that he was riding fell in. Since then, the hound is said to haunt the area near the river with its presence announced by the sound of rattling chains, wow. Which is also one sound that's kind of been associated. I don't give a whole lot of credence to that source. There wasn't a whole lot to back it up.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot of that information. It was more like, with what we're going to get into, more like scratching and, you know, like a dog trying to come in after you let it out to go pee-pee.
And generally the Black Shook has been described as terrifying to see, but not dangerous. Mm-hmm. It has most often been associated with the areas of Suffolk, Norfolk, and East Anglia, modern-day Cambridge.
Oh, okay.
One theory that I really do subscribe to is that it points to when Vikings and Norwegians migrated to the British Isles and settled there, bringing some of the myths and beliefs that they had, and that got integrated into the English culture.
That would make sense. Now, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and the main thing I point to is with our Akershus, the myth of the Kirkgrim, which we saw had dated back fairly far, not necessarily to that time, but also there's not a lot of great records to that point.
True.
So that's not 100% certain, but that's kind of one of my theories.
It kind of lines up, though. It's a pretty solid theory.
Yeah, I mean, there's consistencies between the two.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely.
One of the earliest reported sightings I have of the Black Shook was in 1127, associated with an event known as the Wild Hunt. Basically, think of ghosts going on a big, like, ghost hunt during the winter.
Nice. Are they hunting for ghosts or hunting for people to make them ghosts?
They're basically just kind of doing, like, a hunt where, you know, guys would go out with a whole bunch of dogs and they would, you know.
A proper hunt.
Yes, but with ghosts.
Nice.
That's a whole separate thing in itself. I'd recommend looking up on YouTube Overly Sarcastic Productions or Extra History. They do a great job diving into the myth of the Wild Hunt.
That's awesome.
Which also spans the globe too. So needless to say, I'm not about going into two globe spanning myths.
Yeah, we have enough right now.
I have a day job. So
you do.
So also a fun thing with that is that it's likely the Wild Hunt was actually just people associated with the sound of wind going through the dead trees during the winter.
Okay, that would make sense.
Basically, it boils down to it's dark all the time and there are spooky sounds outside. Let's make some up to justify why there's spooky sounds outside.
And we
outside.
Don't have TV yet, so we'll just make up stories.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
Yeah, so that's kind of a little bit on the Black Shook. I can come back around a little bit, too, on the Church Grim, which, and the Barfist later, if you've got anything to add to that.
I don't think so. I mean, right now I'm just getting like major fluffy vibes from Harry Potter. Oh, and the Grimm, of course.
Have you just been thinking about Harry Potter this whole time?
Possibly. I haven't watched the movies in a while or read the books.
All right, fine. Well, here's another little thing to feed your Harry Potter appetite.
Thank you.
So one of the other names for the Barfist is the Padfoot of Wakefield.
Stop it.
Yes. No joke.
Stop it.
There is one of the Hellhound names is the Padfoot.
I mean, J.K. Rowling herself is really problematic, but she did her research on the book.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I'm purely sticking to the books here.
Yeah, we're just talking about the books.
Yeah.
But like, that's showing some good research right there. Like, yeah. All right, we went into the mythologies. We're going to throw that in the book.
Yeah, hey, it was awesome.
So I'm guessing that one was Sirius. Mooney was Remus Lupin.
Yeah, that's getting to werewolves, which we'll have to get into
have to get into werewolves.
Oh, my God, yes. I love a good werewolf story.
Who doesn't love a good werewolf story?
Okay, so, other than that, I have the Barfist, which is described as being about the size of a small donkey, with large teeth and claws, and typically appears at night because, you know, when would they ever come out in broad daylight?
Yeah, I wouldn't come out in broad daylight if I was a Grimm.
Yeah, though I meant, would you still be just as scared to see that if you were, like, walking down like an open field and just, like, big black dog coming at you from, like, a mile away?
Everything you're describing is frightening.
Okay.
Like literally frightening.
Okay. Like you would find it terrifying if this thing was just bounding at you relentlessly. It was like 2 miles away and you were trying to sprint through an open field and it was like, it was hell bent on taking you out, but you had like a good 5 minutes before it could catch up to you.
Nothing you're describing is enjoyable.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Nothing you're describing. Like, no, that picture is not in my mind.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, never mind. Have a good night, everybody. Enjoy. So the Barfist is also considered an omen of death, and it's typically said that those who see it will meet their end. I don't know if you noticed, but I'm sensing a pattern here.
There is a little bit of a pattern. They guard the underworld. They guard graveyards in places where a lot of people have died. They are the ushers into the underworld, and they bring on death.
Yep. So the quiz is going to be pretty easy this week.
Stop it.
The one thing I did find is that the Barfist name is likely German in origin.
Okay.
Other than that, the one that really kind of got me was the Church Grimm, which is black dogs that haunt Christian graveyards, protecting them from the dead, from witches, warlocks, and vandals.
Mm.
And if you recall from our Akershus episode, also apparently church scandals.
Wait. Witches, warlocks, vandals, and church scandals.
Yep. So, yeah, if your priest suddenly disappears, you know what happened.
Yep. That's all that happened.
Yeah. So sometimes they're also seen during funerals by the people, obviously by the people carrying them, not the dead person.
No, the dead person sat up and saw them.
Yeah. So
pointed them out.
Sometimes they were considered. Sometimes the idea was that seeing them or depending on what they were doing could give an indication of whether the deceased was bound for heaven or hell.
I wonder where they were going if a hellhound appeared at their funeral.
Well, I think it was kind of like what they were doing. So like if they were acting very like either graceful or malevolent, like
the hound or the person,
the hound. I'd be very terrified as a pole bearer if the dead body was growling.
Oh no! Oh, I would be drop that and run away real quick.
I mean, that wouldn't be the first problem I've had with the dead person.
So then, how would a hellhound act graceful?
Just kind of maybe trotting along tail. Or just kind of watching silently, stoically over like a hillside.
See, that would make me nervous.
I mean, I guess it would, but also I don't. To be honest, I'm just speculating right now.
Yeah.
I don't have anything that says, like, oh, if you see a dog doing this X, Y, and Z while you're carrying a dead person, this is what it means.
Yeah. Yeah, they're coming to take their soul.
Yeah.
To hell.
So a similar place where a lot of these myths were used was Norway and Denmark. and may have been brought over in the 8th and 9th century during the Viking settlement of England, which is a whole other epic story in itself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You'll have to tell that story.
Oh, my God. Yes. So that's kind of a little bit of some brief history on that. I'm going to cover some other stuff a little bit later.
Yeah. So let's talk about when these things have actually been seen, because we do have some sightings. We do. Oh.
Naturally. I mean, somebody's got to live to tell these tales.
Well, yeah, live to tell and then die. So there have been quite a few hellhound sightings. However, they can't necessarily be confirmed if people actually saw the hellhounds or they saw something else. Because, you know, again, we talked about them appearing at night and what we're about to talk about during a storm with a couple churches. Like, again, you know, visibility.
Yeah.
Not the greatest. The earliest hellhound sighting happened August 4th, 1577 at two churches in Blytheburg and Bungay in English countryside. If I mispronounce that, I am sorry. I've never been to England. The sighting is actually considered to be more of an attack. So during a storm on August 4th, the Black Shook reportedly broke through the doors of Holy Trinity Church in Blytheburg, about 7 miles from Leiston Abbey, which is going to be very important later. And charged into the congregation. It was during this attack that it killed a man and a boy before the church steeple collapsed through the roof. As the hellhound left the church, it left claw marks on the north door of the church, which are supposedly visible today.
Ooh.
Spoopy.
Yeah.
The same day, it is rumored to have rampaged through St. Mary's Church in Bungay, which, as I said earlier, is about 7 miles away. Now, this is a rough estimate, where it killed two more people. This encounter was described in A Strange and Terrible Wonder, which is a pamphlet written by Reverend Abraham Fleming. And we have a direct quote from the pamphlet here. So if it's okay with you, I'm going to read it.
Go ahead.
This black dog, or the devil, in such a lioness, God he knoweth all who worketh all, running all along down the body of the church with great swiftness and incredible haste among the people in a visible form and shape passed between two persons as they were kneeling upon their knees and occupied in prayer, as it seemed, wrung the necks of them both at one instant clen backwards in so much that even a moment where they were kneeled, they strangely died. Wow, I'm sorry. I just totally messed up the
end. You just killed the buzz.
Listen, there's a lot of very interestingly spelled words here. They strangely died. So that is an account of the attack of the Black Shook on August 4th,
1577.
Damn.
Now that is a spooky story.
That is a spooky story. Now, there are more sightings. But I think you had something.
I was going to say, because that's a great story. But
it is a great story.
It is a great story, but
I think you have.
It's kind of just a story.
That's okay. We love just stories here.
Sorry, but so part of my research is I also did find this. And he describes on August 4th in St. Mary's Church, the dog running through and killing two of the individuals by the neck as they kneeled in prayer. Now, some of the research I found was a pretty notable researcher for these kinds of myths in England, a Dr. Christopher Reeve and a David Waldron, who actually later found through some research in local history of these areas that the two men who were supposedly killed by the hound were actually in the church tower when lightning struck and the collapse happened. So it's entirely more likely that this story was actually a church collapsing and causing the death of the two men inside. Now, Reverend Abraham Fleming likely probably created this story to sensationalize and promote the church to the people by generating fear of, you know, a literal demon hound running in, killing two people, then tearing down a church.
I mean, I'll be honest, that would not make me want to go to church.
That would not. Really? Because I feel
I would feel like, is your church, like, first of all, aren't churches or graveyards considered, like, hallowed ground?
Well, yes, but also at the same time, you have dogs ghost dogs guarding graveyards.
Yeah, so. But they're guarding. They don't necessarily go in. So they're guarding. But that would make me feel like, okay, what's going on here that this dog can just come in, like, do whatever it wants to do and run out?
I mean, you got to put yourself in the mind of someone from England during this time. So, I mean, understand, this is still, you know, teaching of science as we know today isn't a common thing.
That's true.
Basically, what they're trying to say is, get closer to the J-Man, otherwise the hellhound.
J-Man, goodbye.
Get closer. You guys need Jesus, or else hellhounds are going to start coming through the door and wrecking stuff.
But again, I feel like his argument, I don't know. Whatever this guy was trying to do to, like, bring people in by publishing this pamphlet, if, you know, people really did pass away through, you know, the church collapse instead of the dog, like, I just feel like that marketing strategy is not really solid.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe it was solid for 1577.
You gotta remember, the church is still around, so something.
That's true.
Something they did work.
But so is the hellhound.
This is also true. They also had a great marketing strategy.
They do.
Of terrifying the shit out of everybody.
Well, talking about how the hellhound is still around, we actually, I have a sighting here from around the height of World War II.
Really? All right. Yeah. Go into this one.
So there's an account of a 4-year-old British girl who was sent to bed, but she couldn't sleep. So what did she do? She did what most kids do. You sit on the edge of your bed and you look out the window.
Yeah, because that's something I totally do when I can't sleep.
Well, she didn't have a smartphone. The girl heard a scratching noise, and then out of the corner of her eye, a massive black dog appeared and walked in front of her. She later recounted the dog had very large, very red eyes, which glowed as if they lit up. She grew terrified as it looked at her and said she was very much aware of the creature's breath, which was warm and strong like a gust of wind. Before it reached the door, the dog vanished.
So was the dog outside the house or?
Yeah, here's the thing. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. We're just going by an account here. And again, 4-year-old.
Yeah, I was just like, holy, was this thing already in the house? Because, I mean,
it is. It has ghostly abilities. It could just walk through the wall and be like, hey, I'm in your hallway now.
I guess, but I mean, like, you gotta give someone a fighting chance to at least let them shut a door.
She had a chance to shut a door. She could have gotten off her bed and shut the door because it didn't quite get to the door yet.
Fair enough.
But then it disappeared.
So
it was getting summoned to go get some bacon strips. So we have another account that took place in England from a Simon Sherwood. He was around 3 to 5 years old at the time of the sighting. He awoke to hear the patter of feet. He says he looked up, thinking it was his dog, but instead saw a massive black animal, probably with horns, which that's a new one, but also could have been ears, galloping towards his bedroom. So I'm going to safely say this dog was inside his house. He claims the creature's eyes were bright yellow and big as saucers. Sherwood claims he tried to scream and found it was impossible. As the animal reached the bedroom door, it vanished. Once it vanished, he screamed for his mom to come and calm him down. And like any good mother, she came. So one thing to note with this account is that he was not able to speak or move while seemingly unconscious, which is a symptom of sleep paralysis. This is something that happens when the brain and the body are out of sync when sleeping. Have you ever experienced sleep paralysis?
No, I don't think I have, actually.
I really hope you never have to, because it's honestly horrible.
Okay.
Like, it is horrible. I've experienced it so many times in the old apartment we used to live in. Oh, my God. It was so scary.
I'll take your word for it.
So, both accounts we've read so far involve seeing these animals at night, and one brings up sleep paralysis. If this is something that is a sleep paralysis-induced hallucination, why is it so wildly consistent?
Well, one of the things that was, why is it so wildly consistent that sleep paralysis is with dogs?
No. That we, like, this is something that we've seen all over the world. Like, people have accounts of this dog all over the world at night. You know, we had the little girl seeing it in her house, this little boy seeing it in his house. So it can kind of be thought that this might be a sleep paralysis hallucination. So why is it so consistent across the world? Like, everyone's maybe it's a simulation.
Well, lucky for you. Okay, just hold your horses there, Morpheus. And let's just calm our tits, because I do actually have a little bit of research into some potential reasons why this is such a common thing.
Oh.
Yes, I came prepared.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you came prepared.
All right. So one of the things is that obviously man and dogs have a very, very long history. We're talking like back to the Stone Age, obviously. Man's best friend. Now, obviously with dogs, however, also there's a lot of times been speculation that man and wolves have often had a long struggle against each other, leading to a potential kind of deep-seated antagonist or viewing wolves as an evil entity that still exists in humans today. This kind of has even been seen with a very strange kind of fear or relation that humans have with snakes. How snake phobia of snakes is very common for people, and even those who like snakes still report having strange feelings when they have snakes on them or in physical contact with snakes.
That's pretty fair.
So this is potentially a kind of a more primal human fear of wolves that has kind of kept us alive for a very long time and could just be a manifest of that.
Okay, that's a really good thought. Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. And especially if you're a child and, you know, it can be thought that maybe both of these children were asleep and they were dreaming and maybe this was just a nightmare.
And that's also possible from stories as well, because one also thought for a lot of these origins of the myths, much like the Wild Hunt, is to kind of keep kids safe.
Keep them inside, keep them safe.
Yeah, because, you know, are you as a kid going to go outside wandering, exploring through the woods away from your parents when they tell you that there's...
Absolutely not.
Yeah, when they tell you there's a literal donkey-sized demon dog out there that will tear you limb from limb.
So what if I told you that there's an account of someone who is an adult and awake?
All right, well,
Do you just want to hear it?
Nope. I don't have notes for it. Yeah, let's go for it.
You're like, oh, I don't know if I can debunk this one.
I was not prepared for adults.
So there's an account from 1908 from an Englishman who is walking home from an inn, and he suddenly saw an animal that seemed to look like a large black dog appear in front of him.
Because it is a large black dog.
Whew.
Sorry, did I just spoil it?
Well, not really.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, the whole thing.
Yeah, we already knew it was going to be a hellhound. Yeah. Spoiler alert from the beginning of the episode. So it jumped out of a hedge and ran across the road. He thought it was a dog belonging to the curate, and he was going to call it and try to send it home, when suddenly its appearance changed. It turned into a black donkey, standing on its hind legs, and had two glowing eyes which looked like saucers. He looked at it for a minute, and it suddenly vanished. Now...
I think that was not a demon dog. I think that was a straight up demon.
Possibly.
That
definitely
was
possibly
an ass.
It was an ass. It is unknown if the man had a few drinks at the inn or if this was a drunken hallucination.
Are you kidding? He went to an inn. That man was shit faced.
Listen, I don't know.
Why else do you go to an inn but to have a good time with the men or the buddies?
Good time with the buddies.
I don't think it was the boys yet, so, you know, the lads.
The lads, yes.
Yes.
Yes. It must have been a Saturday since Saturday's for the boys. So, again, we don't know if this is a drunken hallucination, but there's quite a few similarities.
Whatever he's having.
Yeah, he's probably having some of that absinthe. It can also be noted that some animals, such as cats, raccoons, and dogs, have a layer of reflective tissue over their eyes known as a tapetum lucidum, which causes light to bounce off of them and is responsible for the eye shine. So that's one reason these accounts could be saying that, you know, they're having the glowing eyes, then they're as big as saucers. But the coloration of the red... That's a little bit different.
Yeah, because usually that's more of a...
It's like bright.
Yeah,
like
it's...
Whitish, yellowish. Yeah,
whitish, yellowish. I mean, I've seen it a couple times when I've been out camping and I'll shine my light in some brush and see a raccoon or something.
Oh, that's such a hard pass for me.
Yeah, I have a few funny stories on that one. My favorite, though, was the time that I was leading a group of campers on a night hike, and one of the parents so kindly decided to bring their pet Irish wolfhound with them.
Wait, was this...
Yeah, you were there.
I was there for this.
Yes, and all the kids thought that there was basically a wolf or a demon.
It was basically a hellhound.
Yeah,
it
running
really
around
was.
Them.
Because the dog was not on a leash.
No, and they also came at the last minute, so none of the kids noticed it as it was coming up. So there's just this literal, like, waist-sized wolf dog.
Yeah, this thing was massive. It was so sweet, though.
Oh, it was so sweet,
Such a sweet dog.
But, like, that thing running around, it was the greatest night of my life watching those kids be terrified.
Well, no, the best part, though, was when we did... So JP and I were counselors for this nature camp back when we were younger. Amazing nature camp. We were campers, and then we, you know, as we got older, we became counselors ourselves. And there was one day during the week where all the campers and their families would come to this field, like near kind of a woods area at night. And we would stargaze. This man brought a telescope, and, you know, we'd look up into the sky and see planets, and we would take a night hike. And this was specifically done without flashlights. This story is going to have a point, I swear. On this night hike, we would do, like, don't nod off. We would do different experiments. Like, there was one that we did with the triboluminescence.
Because of the spooky part.
Oh, my God. Chewing the spearmint. Really cool. We did a bunch of experiments. So on this night hike where there are no flashlights, the dog was still not on a leash. And it was running from the front of the line of kids to the back of the line of kids. And the kids were freaking out.
It was, you could just track the dog by the screams of the children.
It was so funny.
It was great. And we were laughing. And
it was just great. But was, I would call that our little, I wouldn't even, it's like a heck hound.
Yeah. It was a heck doge.
A heck doge.
Yeah.
Goodbye. So we found our own heck doge, but did they find a hellhound in England? The answer to that, JP, is maybe?
Probably just...
Let me just tell.
Okay.
Let me just tell. And then, so here's the thing with JP and I.
Call me back when you need me.
We love the stories, but one thing I love about spooky stories is if you're able to debunk them, it's great, because then we know we have an answer, and that's awesome. If we're not able to debunk them, that's also great. So for me, this is a win-win either way. So let me tell you what was found. A London-based archaeologist claims to have uncovered a hellhound. A shallow grave was found at Leaston Abbey, Suffolk, that was roughly 20 inches deep. Canine remains were found in this grave. Archaeologists estimate it would have stood around 7 feet tall on its hind legs and weigh more than 200 pounds. So it could have been that dog from the camp. It's believed that the bones likely date to when the abbey was active, which was considered medieval times. So according to the legends of the Black Shook that prowled the English countryside roughly 500 years ago, it's believed this canine could have been connected to the Black Shook.
So...
come in to ruin my day. No, I'm totally kidding. I'm totally kidding. Tell me what you found.
Right. So the abbey, I'm assuming, is also near a burial site?
Most likely.
So do you recall with the church, Grim, how, and we talked about back in the Akershus, where they would often bury a dog so that its soul could stay on as the church, Grim? Yeah, it was...
I did not like that.
Yeah, no, it was definitely like an ASPCA no-no.
Yeah, PETA would be all over their asses.
Oh, God, I'd be all over their asses.
Sarah McLachlan commercials everywhere.
So the point being is that it's entirely possible that this dog that was buried was part of that.
Could be.
And was one of those dogs that was buried so that its spirit could...
I just wish they would have given it a little bit of a deeper grave.
Actually, technically, then yes. Yes, that would mean that this was a hellhound.
Technically a hellhound.
Yeah.
So there you go. Prove it right here. Okay, so
son of a bitch,
right here, Spooky You Podcast, we have just, I don't know what we did, but we did something.
Okay, we basically we supported the notion that this dog was buried, yes, buried in the cultural belief that it would come back and be a church grim, i.e. a hellhound.
Yes, well, maybe a heck hound, because it sounds like a nice doggy.
Fine, it can be classified as a heck doge.
A heck doge.
Yes. Okay, so obviously that's some of the history, like hellhounds and parts of history, and obviously these things have kind of been picked up a bit in pop culture too.
Oh, they definitely have. One of the most notable hellhounds, I think everybody knows this reference, The Hound of Baskerville.
Oh my God, I love this book so much. I read it twice. And
I need to reread it. You need.
I had to read it with a dictionary.
Yeah, that's but, it's Sherlock.
Oh my god, it was so good. Yeah. I also loved the Sherlock episode that they did with it.
I have not watched Sherlock.
Oh my god, you need to get on this on these pop culture references for the podcast.
Okay, well, the next pop culture reference.
So,
or do you want to go on the Baskerville?
I'm
going to
go on the Baskerville tangent. Yes.
Go for it. No, all right. Is your favorite book. I want to hear. Tell me everything.
So it takes place in the Moor. I think in Dartmoor. It's been a little while since I've read the book. And what's interesting is that the book doesn't actually have a lot of Sherlock Holmes in it. So it starts out in London, and it's him initially talking with the client, and they kind of get on a little bit of a chase on a lead that ultimately leads them needing to go back to the moor. And strangely enough, it's mainly from Watson's perspective, and he's Sherlock Holmes is absent for the majority of the book. And it's this whole mystery of trying to figure out what's going on and all the plays behind the people who live around the moor. And all this time, like, people are kind of being knocked off by this hound that's stalking the moor. And it's like this very gloomy marsh area. I'm not going to reveal who kind of was in it. Read the book, because it's great.
Yeah, I need to reread it. So if you can just bring that copy up, that'd be great.
I'll dig it up and find it.
Thank you.
So The Hound of Baskerville, one of the most famous of Arthur Conan Doyle's books. And then did you have another one? Because I had one.
Oh, I have a lot.
Okay, go ahead.
A hellhound was also featured in Harry Potter as the Grim, which we've talked about Harry Potter.
Yep, that turned out to actually just be the Padfoot.
Two hellhounds named Zool and Vins were key plot points in the 1984 film. Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Chris's favorite movie.
Oh my god, I can't believe I did not.
Oh no, there's the whole list on Wikipedia, because that's where I do most of my research. It's fine. A hellhound named Samuel was a main antagonist in the first Hellboy film. Hellhounds appear in The Omen and Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief.
Just need to forget that movie exists.
Yeah, I've never seen it. Need to. No. A hellhound named Thorn is the guardian of Max, the vampire in The Lost Boys.
No idea.
Okay, so this is something. I wrote this down and I wrote like something else on it here. Okay. Hellhounds appear in the film All Dogs Go to Heaven. Have you seen that?
No.
I haven't either.
Okay.
We were not an All Dogs Go to Heaven family. We were a Cats Don't Dance family. Do you remember that movie?
Yes, I remember that movie.
It's fantastic.
It is. It was great.
So in All Dogs Go to Heaven, there's a nightmare sequence. Charlie is sent into the abyss of the underworld and meets a beast called the Hellhound and is humiliated by the Hellhound's demonic minions. I've never seen this movie. This seems scarring.
That seems traumatizing. And I would not, seeing a hellhound, I would not think humiliating. I would think, holy shit, terrifying.
Yeah, but this is a kid's movie.
Yeah.
This is a children's
yes,
movie.
Yes, but this was like 90s children's where they would like actively try to scar us.
That is very true. I have been scarred by a few movies.
Let's not forget Courage the Cowardly Dog, Return the Slab moment.
We cannot forget
everyone
Courage
in our
generation.
Return the Slab episode.
No.
Everyone in our generation was traumatized by that episode.
No. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No.
So don't. Yeah. So, I mean, it's. I would fully expect that to just be like, you know, horrific.
Yeah. Growing up in the 90s, all bets were off.
Yeah.
Like, literally. The Hellhound has also appeared in several video games, such as basically all of the Call of Duties.
Wait. Back up.
That's what Wikipedia said. I'm not writing them down.
Okay, no, not in the Call of Duties. That's just the whole attack dog thing. Those aren't hellhounds. Those are just attack dog.
Okay, so you heard
dogs.
It here, folks. The internet got something wrong. Wow. I know it's shocking. So they are in the games Heroes of Might and Magic 3, Master of Magic, Neverwinter Nights, Eye of the Beholder, Pokemon.
Are we just going to keep listing these off?
No, this is it.
Okay.
Pokemon, there's Houndour and Houndoom.
Oh, yeah. I like those guys.
Final Fantasy, World Commander, The Elder Scrolls, Skyrim, and Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah, a lot of games.
Oh, and also you can also now fight one in AC Valhalla.
Oh my god.
Hey, I had to get my one Assassin's Creed reference in.
One of these days, we're going to have an episode where JP does not reference Assassin's Creed.
Still working on that.
Still working on it.
Okay. Well, yeah. So obviously, they're pretty popular.
Yeah, they've been featured a lot.
One of the one of the most famous terms of hellhounds or devil dogs is the famous nickname of the United States Marine Corps.
Actually, I just thought of another devil dog reference, and it's from Wreck-It Ralph.
Wait, what?
Okay, so in Wreck-It Ralph, when Ralph is a prisoner and he escapes and they send the devil dogs after him, but it's like a sweet treat, you know, because the cops are donuts and the cops have the devil it's fun. Anyway.
I was talking about the Marine Corps. You interrupted that for Wreck-It Ralph?
Yeah.
You interrupted the United States Marine Corps for Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah. And I would do it again. Okay. Try me.
God, well,
okay, go back to the Marine Corps.
I'm not standing within 3 feet of you.
That's probably a good idea.
So this dates back to World War I and for what has long been standing known as the Battle of Belleau Woods, where supposedly in German records, they claim that the Marines fought like hellhounds or devil dogs, and the name stuck.
Oh.
However, recent investigations have not been able to uncover any officer notes, records, or logbooks that support this notion that the Germans called the Americans devil dogs.
Mm.
Now, you could say, oh, you know, those records would probably be lost or something. But, I mean, we have them for a lot of other points in the war for both sides. So it's kind of unlikely. Plus, another thing that was later found is that this was actually put on posters and propaganda posters for the war effort before the Battle of Belleau Woods, and the German grammar that was used was not something that a traditional German speaker would have said or pronounced it.
So are you kind of saying that we might have given this nickname to ourselves?
We may have. It might have just been one of those. It was part of a famous propaganda piece.
Okay.
And people signed up under that notion, and it just kind of got talked around and for a while. I mean, trust me when I say this, though. When you read some of the things about stories throughout the history of the Marine Corps, yeah, it's a rightly earned name.
Okay.
He went Navy, and he used to joke that in Afghanistan and Iraq, the enemy forces would learn not to shoot at Marine Corps convoys because when they would get out, they'd look around, find who was shooting, and then go and run them down and take them out.
I don't like that.
So basically, that's why you don't mess with Marines, and that's why they are badass. Mm, so
they're the hellhounds.
Yeah, so we started talking about English dogs, and now we're talking about how badass the Marine Corps is.
No, I'm still talking about English dogs.
Oh. I was talking about the Marine Corps.
You can talk about the Marine Corps all you want.
Okay.
I'm still going to talk about doggos.
Demon doggos.
Demon doggos.
Okay.
But that, honestly, that wraps it up for me.
Yeah, I got nothing more than that. So if you guys happen to hear or see a dog with gleaming red eyes and black fur, first run. Then comment on our Instagram.
Yes, comment on our Instagram. You can find us at Spooky You Podcast. Don't forget to email us at spookyyoupodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, again, preferably please do this after you get away from the dog.
Yes, please take care of yourself for self-care.
But get pics. Get pics.
Yeah, pics or didn't happen. Jinx!
God. Crap!
Special shout out to Chris Phillips for editing this episode.
Thanks, dude.
Have fun with this one. And Megan for designing our logo. You're a goddess. We love you.
I have no idea who you are.
You met her?
Oh, I did?
Yeah, you met Megan.
Oh, hi, Megan.
At my office.
It's so good to see you again. Oh, wait, shit. This is a podcast.
This is a podcast. And that's it. So that was Hellhounds. That was fun.
Yeah.
He's just shaking his head like, I don't know what's happening.
No, I'm fine. Class dismissed. Everyone go.